Amen. Blessings.
I am mostly happy that I decided to do this. But I am very happy you're here to listen. And by, after all, I have my Wayne water bottle, so I should be good. My journey of seeking salvation. About 8 to 10 years ago, I was at a Doc Mennonite Academy girls soccer game, serving as game supervisor through my role as athletic director. While at the game, I was having a few chit-chat conversations with parents when John came up to me initiating conversation. John and I frequently talked, either during or after his daughter's games. He was passionate about sports and was quite philosophical about a good many topics, which is down my line as well. In this day, he had several comments about how good Doc has been for their three children. Then he said this, "You know, Tim, we did not send our children to Doc because you guys are evangelical, because we have taken care of that. But we sent our children to Doc because we wanted them to learn how to love." Wow. I told him I appreciate the kind words, and I was hoping that we continue to live up to that expectation. Here we had a father and a family that lived by a strong set of Christian beliefs and convictions that could have fenced us in, but instead they embraced us and treasured what God had in store for them in a religious culture that was somewhat different from where their tradition had been taking them. They say in cattle farming, good fences make for happy neighbors. Now, I just left out my cattle last night, and I hope the neighbors are still happy. In our political and religious interactions, good fences do not often lead to good outcomes. In these are more contentious times, it appears our ideological fence building has created more animosity and has encouraged more fence building rather than bridges of conviction and attempts to understand and respect the other. This work of building bridges can be a measure of salvation. Over the past 65 years, my original understanding of salvation has grown and changed from the starting point I experienced as a child and youth. And as Ron said, it is somewhat different than what he experienced. This morning, I'd like to share with you some of the growth and changes that have come on this journey of mine. During my formative years as a child and youth, my church was quite plain in dress as a Mennonite congregation. Men wearing plain Nehru jackets and women wearing cape dresses and head coverings. Some of you as older individuals could resonate with that, I'm sure. For my first 10 to 12 years, my small congregation sought to be separate from the world. And looking back, was a blend of evangelical and Anabaptist Christian faith perspectives. At that time, the lead and most emphasized message I heard about Christianity was that we were sinners saved by grace. The most emphasized sins I heard about were pride cometh before the fall, and anger is not an emotion we entertain as Christians. In fact, I distinctly remember thinking that Christians do not get angry. And it wasn't until my teenage years that I had somewhat of a rude awakening and started the journey of not being unduly shaken by anger expressed by others toward me. It wasn't until my college years that I decided to begin an effort to understand my own anger and how to appropriately deal with anger and express it. Sexuality had its elements of sin as well, that was emphasized. However, we learned about appropriate behaviors through a book strategically placed on our bedroom dresser. The book I was given was The Stork is Dead by Charlie Shedd, and I don't know if you older folk would have run into that one or not. We were not to dance, And I'm not sure why I felt compelled to tell my parents as a seventh grader we were going to be square dancing in phys ed class. My parents wrote me a note, and I sat out of the activity. I recall not enjoying feeling different and left out. Looking back, this would have been one instant I could have rebelled, but I was so locked in to the fear-based theology. The list of emphasized sins would have gone on to not drinking alcohol, to turn the other cheek and not fight, and for women, the importance of wearing their prayer veiling. These sins were articulated as separating us from God and leading to possibly going to hell. During my childhood, During my childhood years, I remember going to several George Brunk tent revival meetings with my parents, further impacting the message of being sinners saved by grace. During my teen years, the Hal Lindsey Rapture film came to town, which further embedded a fear of God and having to prove worthiness of, or being good enough. Over time, became more mentally programmed to having to do things for God's approval, but also needing to please others. This was beginning to not feel like salvation. During my early to middle adult years, I became somewhat overwhelmed with anxiety and depression and began seeking a God solution. Jesus said, "I have come so that you may have life and have it abundantly." At that time, I wanted to be able to get to that point of knowing abundant life. During this time period, I began reading some of Henry Nouwen's writings, which introduced me to the contemplative practice of Christian faith. In short, spending time listening to God. Also during this time, I had the privilege of joining a Sunday school class here at Perkasie Mennonite that followed a book on 12 steps for emotional health. In addition to the very helpful sharing we were able to do in this class, two of the salvation tools I took from that class were to let go and let God, as well as the Serenity Prayer. A few years later, I took two classes at the Chestnut Hill School of Contemplation, the first being a study of theology and a second on prayer. At this school, I was somewhat of a fish out of water in that I was the only male attending those classes, mostly because the contemplative perspective was not real popular with men at that time. As a result of my work through the contemplative perspective, I have come to know God in a new and different way. Here's a statement that defines that change. By the grace of God, I can know that I am a gift from God and have been given gifts for the purpose of making a difference in this world, that I am loved by God and I am pursued by a God that is like a hound dog from heaven, and that who I am is enough. As I have come to understand, to know requires a time to practice habits of connection with the Spirit of Christ within me and around me. Night watch is an exercise that was introduced to me by a student in my Chestnut Hill prayer class. The goal of this exercise is to free the mind of negative clutter, move more quickly to sleep, and to open to what God is messaging me through my thoughts the next morning. This is how it is done. As soon as my head hits the pillow, or shortly thereafter, I repeat several times the prayer, "Jesus, Lord Jesus Christ, have mercy on me," or I may use a word such as Yahweh. By thinking about God in that way, I usually wake up thinking about Him. I'll look to stay in bed for about 15 minutes after I wake, to remain in that relaxed, godly presence, listening to what comes to my mind that is life-giving. This has become a core connection for for me to be restored in my soul. This has given me a strong measure of salvation over the years, since those middle years. On to the world of athletics in my life. According to my dad, and my mother was mostly in agreement, sports were a distraction to our spiritual life. Dad did not want any of us, we were five children, to get involved in organized sports. However, I need to give credit to one of my brothers who invited a coach back to the farm during milking time to convince Dad that sports would not interfere with church in any way. Dad was not willing to budge. But somehow my brother John worked it out to play basketball his senior year at Boyertown High School. My brother Ken and sister Rhoda went to Doc in the early to mid-60s. At that time, Doc was still very much wanting their young people to remain separate from the world. They required their boys' basketball players to wear three-quarter length pants, or clam diggers, as they called them, and girls to wear culottes. Also during that time, the only occasion they played other schools was to go play other Mennonite high school teams. I understand there was one occasion when the boys' basketball team went to another Mennonite school and traded in their clam diggers for normal shorts. I understand that did not go over well with the school authorities back in Lansdale. When it was time for me to decide about Doc, I made playing basketball a bargaining chip. My parents conceded. And so when I started at Doc in the late 60s, we were playing 20-game seasons and wearing normal shorts. Dad and Mom never embraced my playing sports, but I felt their respect. After 4 years at Doc and 4 years at Eastern Mennonite College, I moved on with my career in teaching phys ed, coaching, and athletic administration. I chose the route of working at three different Mennonite high schools because I wanted the freedom and opportunity to incorporate my faith into coaching. I never saw sports as being a place to convert student athletes to Christianity. However, I did see it as a place to promote, as I call it, gospel principles. Here are some of the gospel principles we have been promoting in our Doc Athletic Department over the past decade or so. First, each student athlete is a gift from God who has been given gifts to make a difference on their team and life beyond. As teacher coaches, we want to inspire rather than use fear tactics when motivating. We want to balance challenge and support within a disciplined team environment. Third, we ask our student athletes to be focused and to do their best for the team. When differences arise, we want to talk with the person rather than about the person. Fifth, we seek to respect all people involved with the game and apologize when we fall short. And last of all, we want to find a meaningful role for each student athlete on the team. It is my belief that these gospel principles are agents of salvation, where we have opportunity to co-create with the Spirit of Christ through sports. A story of when I fell short as a coach. The occasion was our girls' basketball team playing at Lower Moreland High School. The game was tightly contested with 3 minutes left to play. I called a timeout, and as our usual habit, all five players participating were seated on the bench with the rest of the team standing around us. We had about 45 seconds to have conversation and get back out on the court. I will call her Robin. She was seated in the middle of the five girls and was talking with two other players to her right, rather than being in a listening mode ready for me to talk. I told her, "Shut up and listen to me, coach." I could tell she was quite offended, and probably I would have been too, but we had to carry on. She went back out and with her teammates. She initially did not play real enthusiastically, but recovered. We ended up losing by 2 or 3 points. Now, her mother had a reputation for being somewhat of a pistol, and somehow I was able to avoid her wrath and make it to the bus without an incident. Well, a few minutes later, my assistant coach got on the bus and said, "Wow, I just got an earful." After thinking about it overnight, I decided it was the right thing to do to apologize to Robin before the next practice, the next day. In talking to Robin, I said that, you know, that it's important for you, if you are part of the five players on the court, needing to sit down and be ready to listen to how I'm directing the team. And she understood. However, I do apologize for the way I singled you out in that huddle situation. As fate would happen, at our next game at Springfield High School, Robin had the opportunity to make two foul shots with seconds left in the game to win the game. A measure of salvation, not because we won, but because her spirit was in a good place, helping her to do her best. When performing in competitive athletics, one of the greatest challenges is to perform at your best when the lights are the brightest and game conditions are most intense. Over the years of coaching, I have found there are three mental attitudes that student athletes bring to big moment game opportunities. The first, I can't and I won't. I've had players tell me during the end of game, intense ball games, "Coach, I don't want to go into the game right now." A second, "I maybe and I might." This player goes into the game quite tentative. And last of all, "I can and I will." This player is happy to play in a game that is intense, happy to take free throws to win the basketball game. As a coach, my desire has been to continue to improve in providing mental and spiritual tools to further develop the "I can and I will" attitude when the big moments arrive. One of the tools I have provided is the line prayer concept. Joshua 1:9 says, "Be strong and courageous. Don't be fearful or discouraged, because the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." From this passage, I've taken the line "strong and courageous" to be used as a prayer for the heat of the battle of games, for that matter, the heat of the battle for life. So now you are at the free throw line, taking two free throws to win the game. You would go to the foul line and go through your preparation routine, even though you don't know what that is right now. Also saying to yourself at that time, "strong and courageous, strong and courageous, strong and courageous." To block out the, "you are going to miss this shot, you are going to miss this shot." As well as draw from the Spirit of Christ for strength and calmness to take on the big moment. These big moments are opportunities for salvation. In conclusion, I would like to share a quote from John Ortberg, which represents a good bit of my sentiment on what it means to follow Jesus, but also challenges me in ways I want to continue to grow. Some people would, and I quote, "some people would rather debate doctrine or beliefs or tradition or interpretation than actually do what Jesus said. It's no rocket science. Just go do it. Practice loving a difficult person, or try forgiving someone. Give away some money. Tell someone thank you. Encourage a friend. Bless an enemy. Say, 'I'm sorry.' Worship God. You already know more than you need to know." To me, salvation is about following Jesus, being in relationship with the Spirit of Christ, and loving my neighbor. It's about being transformed and empowered by Christ's Spirit. It's knowing I am a gift of God who has been given gifts to make a difference in this world. It's about giving and receiving forgiveness. It's about continuing on the journey. As I understand it, salvation happens daily. I also understand that I see through a glass dimly about my perception of what salvation is. Finally, Lauren Daigle, Christian musician, is someone I recently bumped into because I chose to not listen to a sports talk show, but listen to a pop music station. And I heard her song, You Say. And she is one that has committed herself to communicate God's love to the world, to all people, and also identify with human struggle through her singing. So at this time, we'll sing, we'll hear You Say. Thank you.